You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one show on iTunes that discusses the financial issues in divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. And today, we have a very special guest. I have Larry Sereski, author of Divorce Simply Stated. Now, listen, hands down, this is the best book out there when it comes to learning about the divorce process from start to finish. Simple as that. The book, again, is called Divorce Simply Stated. Larry has over 25 years of experience in family law, and this book teaches you everything, just about, almost everything, you need to know about the legal process of divorce. It has so much in-depth information on the divorce process, information you need to know as you go through. And this is from one of the top family law attorneys in the United States. We're going to have him on the show multiple times. And for this episode, we're just focused on one chapter of his book, and that is how you choose a divorce attorney. So we're going to hear directly from Larry. This is an episode you don't want to miss. So stick around and enjoy the interview. Today, we're welcoming a very special guest. I have with me Larry Sereski. He is an experienced family law attorney. In fact, he was formerly the chair of the family law section of the Connecticut Bar. He's a Huffington Post contributor and author of, and I don't say this lightly, one of the best divorce books that is out there, period. This is a book that everyone should get. It's called Divorce Simply Stated. It's out now on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, Larry, before we start jumping in to this episode, why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I've been practicing law for longer than I like to even think about, but I've been practicing matrimonial law, family law, for about 35 years. At a point around 15 years ago, I turned my practice into a mediation practice. Up till then, I had done mostly litigation and some mediation, but became exclusively a mediator. And at this point in my career, what I wanted to do was share some of the insights that I've accumulated over all these years that I thought might help folks going through divorce, considering divorce, just like, you know, I think they've helped my clients.
And you mentioned mediation a little bit, and I want to give a little bit of an overview, and you talk about this in your book, Divorce Simply Stated. You say that there's two critical decisions that you have to make when it comes to the divorce process. One has to just do with the method of getting divorce, and the second, in which we'll talk about in a lot of depth, is choosing the right attorney. But can you speak just at a high level a little bit briefly about what kind of methods there are, the traditional litigation versus the alternative dispute resolution options that are out there?
An important point for folks who are considering divorce is that you actually do have a choice in many cases of what kind of divorce you want to have. Traditional, or also called court-based divorce, is what you're used to seeing. People either with lawyers or without, let the court system guide them through the process. The alternative is ADR, or alternative dispute resolution. And what ADR is a system of resolving issues and disputes cooperatively that, if done right, takes less time and costs less money and poses less emotional and financial wear and tear on the spouses, and just as importantly, or maybe even more so, on their kids. So that there are two types of ADR that are most prevalent in divorce. One is mediation, and the other is collaborative law, collaborative divorce. And I can speak briefly about each of those if you want me to.
That would be great.
Okay. Mediation involves a single, unbiased, independent individual, usually, and I think should be a divorce lawyer, who helps the spouses in meetings among the three of them, that is both spouses and the mediator, helps them resolve all the issues that need to be resolved. So the mediator is the guide. And in facilitative mediation, and that's what most people do, the mediator is the facilitator. The mediator tells the spouses what the issues they need to resolve are. The mediator collects all the same kinds of information that are collected in a traditional or court-based divorce, but does it quicker, more efficiently, and of course, cheaper. And then good mediators have a feel for personal dynamics. You know, they have insights as to why a particular issue may be difficult to solve. And with that knowledge and their experience in law, they help folks quickly, hopefully, resolve all the issues. Collaborative divorce involves each of the two spouses having their own lawyer. It is also conducted in a series of meetings. There's no mediator. So there are four people in the room, husband, wife, husband's lawyer, and wife's lawyer. They're both represented. And the goal is to reach an agreement. If they don't reach an agreement, however, the lawyers have to withdraw from the case, and then new lawyers have to be chosen, and the folks can go to the traditional divorce route. I should just add very quickly that most divorces, no matter what you choose, even traditional or court-based divorce, most divorces are settled, the great majority of them. The difference is in that ADR, with a good skilled mediator and spouses who are well-intentioned, it can happen faster. And that's a good thing for everybody involved. It saves money and, as I said, emotional and financial wear and tear.
So when you're thinking about picking an attorney, if you're thinking about going an ADR route, does that change what kind of attorneys might even be qualified to help you?
It does to a certain extent. Some skills you want all lawyers to have. You want them to be professional. You want them to charge reasonably. It's a relative term, unfortunately, because all divorces are expensive. You want them to have experience. But if you choose a traditional or court-based divorce, you also want a lawyer who's experienced in litigation. I like to say a lawyer knows how to ask a question and how not to ask a question. And that means that what happens too often in court proceedings and depositions is that lawyers ask too many questions, but that's a topic for another day. And you also want, in a court-based divorce, a lawyer who is a skilled negotiator. You know, if you go the ADR route, your mediator is not negotiating per se. The mediator is helping you negotiate, both of you, husband and wife. But a litigation lawyer, that is one who's involved in court-based divorce, has to know his way or her way around the courtroom and also know how to settle a case. I mean, and that's critical because, as I said, divorces, family disputes ought not to be resolved in court. They should be settled if at all possible.
That's great. And in your book, you provide a list of qualifications for choosing an attorney. I'm just going to read through the list, and then I want to hone in on a few of these issues, qualifications specifically. So the full list is knowledge and experience regarding family law, power of persuasion, family law credentials and reputation, law firm affiliation, meaning solo practitioners or members of a firm, compatibility, communication skills and empathy, toughness and practicality, professionalism regarding the opposing counsel, clients and clients' children, reasonable fees, as you mentioned before. You said there's an X factor of wisdom as well. And I'll include those qualifications in the show notes for the listeners just so they have a brief overview. And of course, it's all in your book. But let's dive into a few of them. So let's start with knowledge and experience regarding family law. And also embedded in that question is, how does age impact, the age of your attorney, kind of impact whether or not you should, they're qualified to help you?
That's a really good question, because age is a factor that can cut both ways. And most folks, you know, when I choose a doctor, it's hard. It's hard to choose any professional. I've got to do the best I can to choose one. And it's the same with folks choosing lawyers. And that's part of what this book is intended to do, is to help them. And the age of the lawyer is important. But more generally, Part of this depends on your financial resources. Most divorce cases do not demand that you have the best lawyer in your town or in your county. What you want is an experienced lawyer, as I said, who knows how to settle cases, knows what's important, knows what isn't. And part of the knowledge and experience that is critical is to know the judges. In the great majority of states, divorce cases are resolved by judges, not juries. There are some, in some cases, some states rather, like Georgia, juries have limited roles. They're not even often used because it's expensive. So you need a lawyer who not only knows the judges, what I mean by know the judges is has experience with the judges, because judges, like everybody else, have, I won't say biases, but they have a world view that can impact a case. So that's critical. If you're not in, and most of us aren't, in the income bracket where you're, you know, affording or able to afford the most expensive lawyer, I'll give you some minimum requirements that I think are particularly important. First of all, you want a lawyer whose practice has been dedicated at least 75% to family law for the last 5 years. And that's experience in your jurisdiction, in your state. You don't want a lawyer who's come from out of state and has been practicing in your state for 6 months, because they're not sufficiently conversant with the procedures and the judges and the clerks and everything else and other lawyers to be able to be effective for you. So that's one thing. Second thing, you want a lawyer in a traditional court-based case who has experience with cross-examination, who knows the rules of evidence, and who has experience with contested matters. Now, I want to point out that you may have to go to court even if you eventually settle your case, because there are some proceedings that can occur even if you eventually settle. For example, you may need temporary support, temporary alimony, temporary maintenance, they're all pretty much the same thing, or temporary support for your children. You try to resolve that, but if you can't, it's not something that can wait a long time. So you may need to have a hearing to get a temporary order. That's an order that's in effect until your case is over. And, you know, that can include going to court, having a hearing, and witnesses being cross-examined. So those skills are important. Now, as far as age, it's an easy mistake to make to think that an older lawyer is more experienced than a younger lawyer, but it ain't necessarily so. And that's for several reasons. First of all, there are lawyers who have become lawyers as a second profession. And I know a number of lawyers in their 50s who have been practicing for just a few years. And so they don't have the experience that the gray hair around the temples might suggest. Second of all, with respect to young lawyers, depending where they practice, if they practice in a firm that has a matrimonial law department, that is, there are other more experienced divorce lawyers there, or what we call a small boutique law firm that dedicates itself only to family law, they're likely to have been mentored by very good, experienced matrimonial lawyers. And if they're in a family law department or in a boutique law firm, family law is all they do. So that in 5 years, they've obtained more experience than a general practitioner may have accumulated in 20 years, because a general practitioner does real estate, does bankruptcy, does all sorts of things besides family law. And the other thing about young lawyers is they do have exuberance and they do have high energy. And in fact, I came up with something that I called, and stop me if I'm going too far afield.
No, this is great.
But I came up with what I call the quality lawyer bargain table, because it occurred to me over the years that there is a way to find top-notch lawyers who aren't charging top dollar. And here's who they are. And, you know, you may not have access to, depending on where you live, to these kinds of lawyers. But if you live in a suburban or an urban setting, you will. All right, so the quality lawyer bargain table consists of lawyers who have practiced principally or exclusively in the field of family law for at least the last 5 years. They have to have been trained at either one of the small boutique family law firms I mentioned or a matrimonial department of a larger law firm. And they have not yet become partners. They're still associates in the firm. And the significance of that is they're not charging partners hourly rate. And when you combine those pluses with what I mentioned before, youthful energy, and often a more caring relationship with clients than you get from some of the grizzled veterans, you're going to get as close as you can find to a bargain lawyer. That is a really good lawyer who's not, as I said, charging top dollar.
That is awesome advice. And one thing you mentioned a few times or several times has kind of run through this thread is the reasonableness of the cost and the fees. You know, there's a perception that the most expensive lawyer in town is the best one. Can you tell us if that's a true perception or how does that really work and how should people think about that?
Well, it's not true. And there are most divorce lawyers charge by the hour and they'll tell you what their hourly rate is. But what you need to know beside hourly rates, and I just recently wrote a piece for the Huffington Post on this, is what's called the increments in which they bill. Lawyers don't write down every minute they spend on a phone call with you or in a meeting with you. They write down a either 1/10 or 2/10 of an hour. And if they bill in increments of 1/10 of an hour, that means that in 1/10 of an hour, 1/10 of 60 minutes being 6 minutes, if my arithmetic is correct. I went to law school, so I wouldn't have to do arithmetic, but I think I can do that much. And 2/10 of 60 minutes is 12 minutes. So a lawyer who charges in 0.1, that is 1/10, 6 minutes, is going to charge you a minimum 6 minutes for anything. A lawyer who charges in 0.2 increments is going to charge you 12 minutes for 12 minutes, no matter what it is. It could be a 3-minute phone call. So the result of that is if you go to a lawyer who charges $350 an hour, bear with me here through the arithmetic, who charges in increments of 0.1, that is 1/10 of an hour, and let's say you have a 3-minute phone call with that lawyer will cost you less than a lawyer who charges charges $300 an hour, but charges in 0.2 increments. So that's a really important key when you're looking for lawyers. And the other thing I like to say about the cost of lawyers, it's based on a lot of things, including location. Where I practice in Fairfield County, Connecticut, there are a couple of towns that are kind of known as, you know, where the good divorce lawyers are, or a lot of them anyway. And they tend to be the more affluent towns. Well, those lawyers are paying a lot of overhead. Their offices are more expensive, everything. And you don't want to be paying more just because your lawyer has fancy digs. There are things that are a lot more important, and hopefully we'll get to them, than that. So, yes, to a certain extent, you know, the better lawyers charge more. I mean, that's a matter of common sense. But you also have to look at why they're charging more. And one other thing I'll say about that is, you know, if you're looking at two lawyers and you've figured out, you've looked at their hourly rate and the increments in which they bill, and they seem to be, you know, pretty close, take a look at how far their office is from the courthouse, because lawyers charge for travel time. As they say, all things being equal, you don't want the lawyer whose office is a half hour away from the courthouse. You want the lawyer whose office is 5 minutes from the courthouse, because you have a court proceeding, you're going to be charged round trip for an hour of time for that first lawyer and 10 minutes for the second lawyer for the travel time.
That makes a lot of sense. You do have to do a little bit of basic arithmetic, but you did it right. And I think those are all very practical ways to think about the cost of your lawyer. Can you also speak a little bit as to certain family law credentials that someone should look for?
And again, I always liken this to going into a doctor's office. You know, you're sitting in a doctor's office before he or she comes in, and you look up on the wall and there are diplomas, and you see, you know, an Ivy League school, and you go, oh, that's impressive. And I have friends who, you know, have on their walls very impressive diplomas, and I know this because I'm impressed by them. But the further you get out, that is from your law school days, that is, you know, a lawyer has been practicing 10, 15, 20 years, those credentials mean very little. What's much more important is the kinds of experience they've had as a family law practitioner. And that's, you know, what I was talking about before. Now, there are some ways to evaluate a lawyer's credentials. First, you've got to do a little research. Nearly all lawyers have websites, and most of what's on there, of course, is self-serving. You know, you're not going to go on there and find a lawyer says, well, you know, I'm not so strong a litigator, but I'm pretty good at this. They're all going to say, you know, I'm great. But some things you might be able to find are what their specialties are. If a lawyer has five or six types of law mentioned, real estate, civil litigation, criminal, and then, you know, at the end of the list, you find family, that's not a lawyer most likely who is concentrating or specializing in family law. So, you know, that's something to take into consideration. And of course, if you don't see family law at all in their qualifications, then it's not somebody you want. So that's one thing. There's also an outfit called Martindale Hubbell, and you can go online and Martindale Hubbell and look up the lawyer by name, and you can find out when they started practicing law. I think avo.com and some of these other online directories may also have that information as well. Generally speaking, Martindale Hubbell is a much more authoritative source, but, you know, just to get that information. So you can find out when they first became members of the bar. You know, basics like that. And I should say one other thing, that some states have certification for family law specialists. And that's an important, in those states, that's an important credential. And in California, Ohio, Florida, Indiana, New Jersey, a few others have that. That's something that you want. I think the very best credential a family lawyer can have, although, and I hasten to add this, there are plenty of top-notch lawyers who are not members, is membership in the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, or AAML. Generally, the lawyers in the academy are top flight. That's not always the case, but, you know, 90, 95% of the case, that's so. They are also, they ain't cheap. So again, you know, you have to kind of balance what your ability is to pay these lawyers with their credentials. So that's the research. The other thing you can do is ask around. And there are two sources of information. I learned early on as a lawyer that one of the best research tools is the telephone. And this is true of clients seeking lawyers as well. The first group to seek information, from whom to seek information, are professionals. And what you're looking for is, you know, what is this lawyer's reputation with the family bar and bench, which is not, by the way, a restaurant, as one of my clients thought it was. The family bar being the, you know, the lawyers in the area, and the bench being the judges. If you know a lawyer who lives in your community, but who doesn't do family law, he or she is likely to know who the better lawyers are. So that's always a good source. Now, you've got to be a little bit careful. You know, if you ask a lawyer you don't know that well, you want to make sure that this isn't just someone who routinely refers cases to this particular family lawyer and gets back, you know, clients in his or her specialty in return. You know, you want someone who's making a legitimate recommendation. And that can be a dicey question to ask, but, you know, there's a lot on the line here. But there are other professionals as well. School guidance counselors sometimes know good lawyers. Mental health professionals who are sometimes called as witnesses in custody cases sometimes also know who the better lawyers are. So, you know, when you start hearing the same name two, three times, that should mean something. Now, I didn't mention clients or former clients, you know, as a source of information. They are important sources of information, but I separate them out for two reasons. One is some clients have either an unreasonably low regard for their lawyer, and those are generally clients who, not always, but often, I should say, who've gotten a result that they're not happy with. And then there are clients who, believe it or not, think the world of their lawyers, see them as knights on white horses and all that kind of thing. And, you know, that's understandable. Divorce is so emotionally laden that, you know, people sometimes think emotionally rather than just logically about their own lawyers. So you kind of have to, you know, take what they say, listen to what they say. It's important. But just keep that in mind, that their idea may be skewed. Now, what clients can tell you that the professionals often can't is, you know, how responsive the lawyer was to them. Did he or she return phone calls or emails in a timely manner? You know, that's not next week. That's like today or tomorrow. And, you know, about their billing practices. Did they bill for things like clerical stuff that, you know, their legal assistant, which is a name that lawyers have started giving what used to be called secretaries, you know, photocopying. I mean, are they billing for somebody's time to photocopy documents, something that you could have done yourself, that kind of thing. Clients get a pretty good idea after going through a divorce of whether they feel they were fairly dealt with in terms of billing. And the last thing that I think is important to ask, you know, someone who's gone through a divorce is, how's your relationship with your co-parent now? Is it better or worse than it was at the beginning of the divorce? And if it's worse, do you lay any of the blame for that at your lawyer's doorstep? Was your lawyer overly aggressive? Did your lawyer fan the flames of conflict rather than trying to put them out? Because that's pretty critical. I mean, the kids of my clients have always been important to me. And in my book, you'll see that throughout. And I think lawyers have a responsibility not only to their clients, but to their clients' children. And so that's an important question you can ask somebody who's gone through a divorce, because you're going to have to co-parent, those of you with children are going to have to continue to co-parent your kids with your ex-spouse for a number of years to come. And you don't want a lawyer who's going to make that more difficult. You want somebody who's going to actually help make that easier.
That's extraordinarily helpful advice. I want to ask one more question related to choosing an attorney, and that is, there's a perception, both particularly propagated by the media, I know there's some new shows on their way out on this very question, about you want the super tough, hard-charging divorce attorney. Is that right?
Not necessarily. And often it's wrong. Often it's wrong. What you want is, and I used to be asked this question by new clients. You know, I'd have an initial consultation with a client, and I would get the question, well, are you going to be tough? Are you going to fight for me? Which I think is something they saw in the phone book, you know, we'll fight for your rights kind of thing. And my answer would be, I'll be as tough as the circumstances require. And I think there's an important difference between being assertive, a lawyer being assertive, that is, telling the other side what your position is and explaining why, and, you know, letting them know that, you know, this is an important issue. A difference between that and being needlessly aggressive. And there are lawyers who are needlessly aggressive for any number of reasons. Sometimes they're just trying to impress their clients. Tough guy or tough gal they are. Sometimes, you know, they just kind of use it as a default attitude. I think we may even know some politicians who do that kind of thing. And I know, because I've watched judges react, lawyers in my community who just are always aggressive no matter what. I know that judges don't respect these lawyers. I know that they make cases more difficult to settle. And, you know, that's, you know, when I said before that, you know, often it's not true. You don't want the battler. You don't want the barracuda or the toughest SOB with a briefcase. You want someone who can be appropriately assertive and tough and understand, you know, what's important to you, what your priorities are, and get the job done. Often that means not fighting over every little thing, because when you do that, as I said, it wastes money and time for one thing, but beyond that, it hurts your prospects for settlement because the other side says, listen, we might as well just go to court. They fight over everything.
And so I think this is all excellent and important criteria that's given the listeners some ways to help choose an attorney. So once they've kind of listened to and followed your advice and done the research, I want to start moving towards the initial consultation. A few questions related to that is, ultimately, how many attorneys, if I'm thinking about choosing one, do I need to meet with and have an initial consultation? And also, can you tell us a little bit more about the process? You know, does the attorney charge for that first consultation? And how do we prepare?
Sure. Well, let's start with how many lawyers you want to interview. Once again, that's a function of expense. If you possibly can, interview more than one lawyer. I often say interview three lawyers. Now, here's something you can do. When you call up to make the appointment, ask the question as to whether the lawyer charges his or her regular rate for an initial consultation, because some lawyers don't. Some lawyer, I know when I meet with new mediation clients, I generally don't, unless I know enough about the case already or we've had extensive contact by phone prior, I consider the first half hour of that meeting a meet and greet. You know, they're getting an idea of me, I'm getting an idea of them, and I don't charge for that. So most lawyers do charge because they can. For the, they charge their regular rates, but not all do. And if you ask the question, you might get an answer that you wouldn't get if you didn't ask. In other words, if you ask the question, they may say, well, yeah, we charge a little bit less, or we don't charge for the first half hour or 15 minutes. Or something. But if you don't ask the question, you'll get charged the full boat. So that's, you know, a little tip that may save you some money. As far as what you should be looking for, there are a lot of things. I have in the appendix to the book, there is a list of questions to ask a lawyer. And I, again, hasten to add that you can't ask a lawyer all these questions. I mean, there must be 25 questions or so. And, you know, you've got other things to do besides just ask these questions in that initial consultation. But what you should do is go down the list and find the questions, you know, three or four questions that are most important to you. For example, you might want to ask, do you prepare your clients before a court hearing or a deposition? And how do you do it? You know, if you're in a high conflict case, this could be an important question. Clients go into court poorly prepared at an alarming rate. I mean, I see it all the time. And if you ask judges, because I have, and I've gotten this answer consistently, what bothers them the most when they hear a case, they say it's unprepared lawyers. And part of that is having unprepared clients. When a lawyer puts a client on a stand and asks a question, and the client clearly has never heard that question before, that client has not been properly prepared. So that's one thing in a, you know, highly contested divorce. But you also want to ask more general questions about experience. How long has the lawyer been practicing family law? What percentage of their practice? You know, a lot of lawyers have been practicing family law for 20, 25 years, but they do three cases a year. That's not who you want. You want to know what percentage of their practice is devoted to divorce, not only right at the moment, but for the last 5 or 10 years. And I say that because I'm thinking of one in which I was asked to advise a client who had a lawyer who had recently moved to her community and was in a boutique, that is a law firm that did just family law. And so, of course, if you asked him, well, how much family law do you do? He'd say 100%. But he had come from, you know, a year earlier, a law firm in which he didn't do any family law. So, you know, you've got to ask those questions. You may want to know what percentage of cases they settle. You know, that's really important. Lawyers who have trouble settling cases may not be what you want if you are someone who prefers to try to cooperatively resolve issues, as I mentioned. And before, when I was talking about mediation and other ADR techniques, I said that most cases, even traditional cases where each side has a lawyer and they negotiate, most cases are settled. So you want somebody who's good at that, not somebody who tries, you know, 50% of the cases they take. I mean, that's, to me, means you've got a lawyer who either doesn't know how to negotiate or is not good at it. You want to know, if you go to see a lawyer who's in a law firm, that's the lawyer you want handling the important parts of your case. And that means a hearing in which there's something on the line, as opposed to a status conference where the lawyer goes down to court and the judge says, you know, when can we schedule trial, or how far along are you, and you know, what's going on in your case. You know, an associate lawyer can do that. Now, you know, there are pluses and minuses of a law firm, going to a law firm as opposed to a solo practitioner. And just very quickly, the plus of going to a solo practitioner is what you see is what you get. A solo practitioner is the only lawyer in the firm. So if that's the lawyer who you've researched, and that's the lawyer who you, in the initial consultation, feel, you know, you've got some, you know, simpatico with, you know, you can get along with, that's important. In the law firm, the advantage of having associates around is that they can do some of the less important stuff, so, and they're charging you at lower rates. So, you know, that's some balancing that you have to do. You want to have the feeling in that initial consultation that this is a lawyer who's listening to you. And that's why it's important to ask questions. And when you ask a question, listen not only to the answer itself, but how the question is being answered. Is it being answered fully? Or is the lawyer answering some question that was rattling around in his or her brain, but not what you actually asked? At that initial consultation, you're going to see a lawyer at his or her touchy-feely best. And, you know, they're not going to get nicer. You know, they're going to get busier as the case goes on. So if, you know, you see the lawyer checking his watch, or, you know, looking out the window, or whatever, you know, that's a warning sign. If you feel, again, when you ask a question, that you're not getting the question answered, or the lawyer is not responding completely, or didn't understand what you asked, or you don't understand what he or she is saying, you know, test that. So, you know, I heard what you just said, but I really didn't understand it. Can you explain that a little better? See how they explain things, because it's so critical for clients to really understand what their lawyers are telling them. So, you know, those are the kinds of things. And again, as I said, I've got about 25 of questions that you can ask, and I strongly suggest you don't ask all 25. You pick a few. But those are the types of things that are particularly important. And one more I'll add is, I also have a concept called be your own paralegal. There are lots of things that you can do as a divorcing spouse that you don't have to pay a lawyer or a lawyer's paralegal to do. And that includes copying documents or scanning documents. Include more than that. You can organize checking statements, put them in order, and there are lots of things that you can do, but it won't happen if you don't ask your lawyer. So ask the lawyer at initial consultation, say, listen, I've got, you know, a limited amount of money to spend on legal fees. I'm wondering if there's some things that I can do myself. And, you know, if you have a lawyer who responds positively to that, that's a good thing. If you have a lawyer who says, well, no, you know, we handle all that, that may not be such a good thing, because while they're handling all of that, they're going to be charging you for all of that.
And for those who want to get more information about you, I know we have just scratched the surface in terms of how to choose an attorney, and the whole, you know, that's a small segment of your book, Divorce Simply Stated. What's the best place to get more information?
We have a website called, strangely enough, divorcesimplystated.com, and there's more information on there, and you can contact me on there as well. There's a contact page.
Thank you very much for your insights, Larry. This is excellent. As I said, you have some of the best knowledge of any family law attorney out there and are able to communicate it very clearly and descriptively for the people listening.
Thank you, Sean. I've enjoyed this, and I hope it's been of help.
Larry is a wealth of information and knowledge, and there's so much that he shared in this show. Be sure to check either my website or the show notes for the links to the specific websites and resources he mentioned on there, and so you can access that same information. And I really encourage you to buy the book, Divorce Simply Stated. It's one of the best ones out there. I get to interview some awesome authors on this show and awesome practitioners in the divorce world, and he is simply at the top of the top. Now, before you go, you don't want to miss some really important resources at divorceandyourmoney.com. Three things there. The first is you sign up for the newsletter with exclusive information that I send only to the people who subscribe. Second is you want my book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. It's really inexpensive. It's at the most $20 if you get the paperback version, or $10 if you go with the e-version. It's available on Amazon, and it walks you through all the key information from a financial perspective that you need to know. It has helpful checklists at the end of the chapters and gives you a great introduction to the total picture from a financial perspective as you go through divorce. And it's super easy to read. And then the third thing is, some of you out there need one-on-one coaching when you're ready. You click the coaching tab on my website, and we can walk through the most pressing issues to you. We do them by phone, online, or in person. I can help you regardless of where you are in the United States, and almost regardless of what your financial issue is, we can dig deep into it, and that's only available in the coaching sessions. And you know, lastly, if you haven't already, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast player and leave a review on iTunes. A 5-star review helps improve our rankings and also helps other people discover the show. And speaking of which, if you know someone else who needs this information, you know, maybe they're contemplating the D word, haven't decided if they're really going to file a divorce, or maybe they're in that final stages, or maybe, you know what, they're in the middle of their divorce, just send them the show, send them a link to an episode, or send them the website divorceandyourmoney.com, and it's a free way to help other people. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Thank you for listening.